Thank you all very much for reading tonight. And as you know, that this the format of this meeting is we have alternating readings, and then on the last Monday of the month, we have a speaker, and the aforementioned Tim is going to be our speaker tonight, who he's part of our UK RSC, but I'd like to hear his share to get to know him better. So, and just keep in mind, everybody, that this is being recorded. So Tim, I'm going to turn it over to you. Thank you for allowing me to be of service, and thank you for being of service, Tim.
Excellent. Thank you, Michael. Isn't it? Yeah.
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, so my name's Tim, and I'm an addict. And,
hello, Tim. Welcome to the meeting.
Welcome.
Hello, Tim.
Thank you, everybody. I think, as I say, I'm an addict. I believe that I'm an addict in the full sense of the word. Yeah, so my story is long and checkered. I started drinking when I was 12 years old. A lad from who I used to knock around with at school was a very naughty boy, and he stole a bottle of sweet martini from his mum's drinks cabinet, and we cycled over the park after school and we drank the whole bottle. And I can still to this day remember the feeling of power and confidence more than anything else that it gave me. And I felt like I could conquer the world. After that, you know, I went home. My mum had gone to work. My dad hadn't come home from work yet. I was promptly sick. I spilt my dinner all over the carpet. My sister cleaned up the dinner and she put me to bed. I'm not sure. I never really asked her if she knew what the problem was, but obviously she probably realised later on in life. But it all started from there, really. I couldn't wait to be old enough to get into the pub and drink legally. But in them days, we could get in the pub when I was 6 foot two at 16 years old, so I could get in the pub easily at 16. And so I reckon probably by the time I was 16, I was an alcoholic without realizing it. I was the kind of child who was always in my own little world, you know. So apart from alcohol, first addiction was slot machines, because I'd get gambling and slot machines. You know, I'd be in my own little world, standing at the machine. I remember as a child, I used to go and shut the door in my bedroom and play with my toys literally all day. And my sister and my mum, they'd come and poke their head around the door to see if I was okay. And I was just in my own little world, you know. And so, you know, when I found drugs, when I was about 18, started work, and there was a couple of guys at work smoking marijuana, and I started smoking marijuana, it just facilitated my little dream world, really. And I loved it. And it was very progressive from then on. I got in a lot of trouble, like knocking around with the wrong characters, committing robberies, doing all kinds of stuff, you know. I got barred from my local pub for putting the front window in, for hitting the owner of the pub as well. Yeah, and it was pretty chaotic. By the time I was sort of 18, 19, 20, I knew I had a problem with drink, and I knew I had a problem with drugs. And I hadn't tried all the drugs, marijuana, speed, but I knew that when them other drugs come along, I was going to try them just to see, you know, just to see what they were like. And actually, you know, every single drug that came along, I fell in love with. Valium, Dexys, Bombers, you know. Then I tried heroin, didn't particularly like heroin, but when I found cocaine, wow, and then crack as well. And yes, I was spending a lot, I was spending all my wages, and so I started dealing, you know, because, you know, the addict said, tells him, yeah, if I get a load, I'll sell a bit, I'll keep a bit, I'll use a bit, that'll be, you know, but it's crazy because I just started doing everything, doing it all, you know, and I didn't have any money, then I owed money as well. So by the time I was 21, the first NA meetings hit London. And somebody told me, read about it or heard about it somewhere along the grapevine. I thought, okay, yeah, let's go to an NA meeting and see what they've got to say. My NA was in its infancy then. It's nothing like it is now. People didn't greet you at the door. They didn't ask you your name sometimes. You just go into the meeting, sit down, listen to a story, listen to someone's woes, and go out and think, well, I'm not as bad as that, you know. Before I went to the meeting, I'd roll a couple of joints in the car. Get in the car after the meeting with a friend of mine who used to come with me. We'd laugh about the person and all their woes. And then go down the pub, smoke a couple of joints on the way, go to the pub, get pissed. Yeah, I didn't really take it seriously at that time in my life. You know, I was 21. The world was my oyster. I knew everything. Nobody could tell me anything. I'd manage, you know. And that was pretty much what, like, it was pretty much like that for the next 30 years, I would say. During that time, when I was 30 years old, I met a Polish girl in London, fell in love with her, went out to Poland, found out her brother was in the mafia, he was trading stolen gems, forged dollars, guns, all kinds of things coming from China and Russia, heroin from Turkey, heroin from China. Started trafficking heroin back to this country. Didn't really like the drug, so I didn't use a lot of it, but the money that I was earning enabled me to use lots of other drugs. That all kind of came on top when the marriage fell apart. I married her, and the marriage fell apart. It was a war zone, really, from start to finish. Ended up owing the mafia money. I think they're probably still looking for me to this day. Came back to this country. I was lucky, really, not to get put in jail, because I was faced 10 years every time I crossed the border. And one of the things why I didn't want to deal with those people was because they fucking used to get really drunk, and they killed somebody in a hotel one night, a receptionist, young pretty girl, started being naughty with her. She didn't like it, answered them back, they didn't like that, they fucking stabbed her to death. And it was, and I just thought, no, mate, I didn't fucking sign up for this. So, yeah, you know, but that was the kind of thing. I was living in Berlin. I was working on building sites in Berlin. I was going to the Irish squat in Friedrichstrasse, which was run by the IRA. Hated those people, all the bombings that they did in this country. But I wanted my drugs, and so I would sit in that squat and deal with those blokes. And they'd be selling Kalashnikovs, and I knew that they were fucking going and killing squaddies in Holland, but I wanted my drugs, you know. And at that point in my life, I still didn't realize that drugs came before everything. You know, I crossed some fucking lines where I didn't care about anything else except drugs. And I wasn't aware of that. Yeah, I just, you know, the reading, it says we live to use and use to live. And that kind of sums it up. I was living to use and using to live. And, yeah, so I was in a proper fucking sorry state. Eventually came back to England, didn't get much better, carried on using, got into my 40s, realised I had a real problem, tried everything, you know, became an expert at the geographical, what we call it in the fellowship, you know, where you move town, move country, things come on top, get away, a new place, a new start, everything will be different. Worked out in the Caribbean within a day of being in the Caribbean. I was dealing with the Rastas, drawing fucking weed off the Rastas, getting all sorts of other drugs as well. Everywhere I went, you know, I went to Australia, decided I wanted to stay out there, ended up dealing in Sydney, getting chased down the road by Romanians, I think, with guns, fucking shooting at me. It was just crazy, you know. But I think I knew I had a problem. I think I knew I didn't like that kind of, those kind of situations. But the drugs just took control of everything. I wanted drugs, and I was going to get drugs, and I was going to get money to get more drugs and more drugs all the time. It was just all about the drugs, my whole fucking life, you know. I ended up going back out to Eastern Europe, and I was bumming around in the mountains, skiing every day, didn't have a lot of money, trying to get clean. Trying to get clean without a program. I didn't know what a program was. I'd never really even looked at a 12-step fellowship. And met a girl out there, got her pregnant, realised I didn't like her. She ended up having a daughter by me. My daughter's now 12 years old. And I still didn't get clean, and I felt so much guilt about that as well, because I thought, right, this is it, I'm going to have a kid, you know, I'm going to shape up, I'm going to become a man, I'm going to become a proper fucking person, and I'm going to stay clean for my daughter. And I couldn't get clean, and I felt so much fucking shame and so much guilt about that. I ended up coming back to this country to get away from her. I never saw my daughter for the first 3 years of her life. And I was 50. And I was going downhill fast. I was living in a fucking shitty old room in High Wycombe. I hated everybody. I hated the world. I was getting sacked from every fucking building site I was working on for fighting, for being aggressive. I was really not a very nice person at that point in my life. And one morning I just got up, got dressed, went down to the main road and fucking shut my eyes and walked across the main road, got to the other side, turned around, couldn't believe that I hadn't been here. Closed my eyes, walked across the road again. Got to the middle of the road, stopped, opened my eyes, and all the cars had stopped. And all I could see was these fucking people in their cars with, I could see the fear in their eyes. There was this fucking lunatic in the middle of the road. What was he doing? You know, and I could see the fear. And all I heard in my voice, in my head, was my sister saying, you need help, and me saying to her, help, where do I get help from? And she said, I don't know, go to the doctors. And that was a higher power moment right there, 30 yards away was the doctor's surgery. I looked over, saw the doctor's surgery, went into the doctor's, and literally fucking broke down in front of the doctor. Poured my heart out, fucking crying like a baby. I was 51 years old. He sent me straight to rehab. Went down to rehab. Started doing meetings every night. They said go to NA meetings, and started hearing the stuff. And I was really, really cynical. Well, I was really wired and shot to pieces at that time. I was having cognitive behavioral therapy every day, one-on-one. I had to go to see Healthy Minds, because at that point in my life, I was doing cocktails of drugs. You know, so I was completely psychotic and completely wired, and I just wanted to kill people, and I wanted to die. And I knew that it wouldn't be long before I'd press that fuck it button. And I had an epiphany in the first few nights. I broke down. I realized that I either had to change everything and do what I was fucking told by these people, or I pressed the fuck it button and died. And I realized at that point I didn't want to fucking die. And so I resolved at that point to do everything that they said they told me. And I was sat in a meeting, and it must have been my third meeting, and my first sponsor came in. I didn't know he wasn't my sponsor at that point. And he looked at me and he laughed, and my head was down. I was looking at the ground, and he said, you need to realize something. And I just looked at him like, fucking what? You know, I wanted to hit him because he'd laughed at me. And he said, he pointed at me, he pointed at my chest, and he said, your fucking best thinking has got you where you are now. He said, you need to realize that. And I hated him. I wanted to hit him. But I knew he was right. My best thinking had got me to breaking point, to the fucking rock bottom. You know, people talk about rock bottoms. Well, you don't get any lower than that. You want to fucking top yourself. And so, yeah, I say I resolved to do everything that other people said. You know, I picked people. You know, my therapist, she said to me, you need to change everything. And I said, what do you mean everything? You know? And she said, everything. I said, well, expand. I said, I don't fucking understand you. What do you mean everything? She said, you need to change the way you look at life, the way you look at people, the way you react to people, the way you speak to people, the way you think. She said, everything you think is negative. I said, what do you mean? She said, everything that you think. She said, negative thoughts lead to negative actions. And, you know, it got me thinking. Everything in my life was fucking negative. She was right, you know. It was a complete negative cycle. I was just going round and round in circles, making bad decisions, doing the wrong thing, thinking negatively, acting negatively, challenging people, being aggressive. And all this had come over fucking years of using drugs, you know. And my first sponsor, he said to me, listen, he said, it's not about the drugs. It's about your fucking behavior. He said if everybody was nice when they used drugs, we'd all be using drugs. Everybody would use drugs. He said, but it's about your behavior. And I was like, yeah, I get that. I get that. I've been really fucking bad, you know. So that was it, you know. I started going to meetings. I started doing service. I started listening, you know. And then I heard that saying from the Dalai Lama. The Dalai Lama says that when you're speaking, that's when you're imparting your knowledge, whatever that may be. He said, but when you're listening, that is when you're truly learning, because then you're hearing things that maybe you don't know. You're hearing things from other people. And so I learned to listen. That's something I hadn't done for my whole life. I hadn't listened to anybody. I thought I knew fucking best about everything. I'd got me to 50 years old, but by the time I was 51, you know, I was at rock bottom, and I realized that, you know, I'd got myself nowhere. So I started to listen. I started to really try hard to focus. And, you know, I had that addict's head, that fucking hamster wheel, where people would say things in meetings and my mind would drift off and go fucking, yeah, start thinking about me and my life. And I had to really work hard to bring myself back and actually focus on the person that was speaking. And, you know, I looked at the steps, read through the steps, and I thought, huh, yep, they're easy. You know, I had all that arrogance. I didn't realize I was a control freak as well. Oh, I tried to control everything. I didn't like the way people acted. I didn't like what people were saying. I wanted them to do what I wanted them to do. I started doing secretarial work at meetings. I started to control the meeting. I wanted it to run the way I wanted it to run. All that kind of stuff, you know. And it was a process. It was a real slow process for me, you know. And I started to see my defects, my controlling nature, my arrogance, my judgmentalism, judgmental about everybody. I pigeonhole people, put everybody in a fucking box. You're like this, you're like that, she's like this, he's like that. And it was fucking painful. I realized that as also from doing the program that I had a mental age of about 5 when I came in. And that didn't get much better for quite a few years. But I managed to stay clean, you know, for 4 years. And it all blew up in my face, you know. I'd made certain amends to my family. I didn't really understand about amends. I was dealing with fucking resentments every day, still angry about this, still angry about that, but I thought I was cracking it because I was 4 years clean. Went on a family holiday. My daughter came over from Poland with her mother. I'm not a very nice person, and I'm glad I didn't marry her. And she pressed my buttons from day one. And after 4 days of it, I blew my top. I spoke to my mother like I've never spoke to my mother in my life. And I come back from that holiday. I went to a meeting straight away, and I fucking just broke down in the meeting. And I felt like I did that first fucking day in rehab. I was in rehab for 4.5 months. I felt like I just thought, what the fuck's going on? I felt like I've been using, but I'm 4 years clean. What am I doing wrong? And it suddenly dawned on me, I haven't done steps. Everybody keeps telling me, you've got to do the steps. It's the only thing I haven't done. I've done all the service. I've done loads of service. I've done 7 meetings a week, a lot of weeks. I'm doing shares. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. I haven't done steps. I've got a new sponsor. I said to him, I want to do the steps in 12 months. He said, yeah, fine. We did the steps in 12 months. 12 steps in 12 months. And I felt a lot better. But I'd only touched the tip of an iceberg, really. I still didn't, there was still a lot of stuff that I didn't understand. The higher power stuff, I wasn't getting that at all. I really, looking back, I brushed over step four, brushed over it. Didn't make full amends in step nine. I'd never comprehensive list of step eight either. That's looking back, you know. But since that day, I'm now doing my fourth step four. My third step four brought me to my fucking knees. I was in tears. I could not believe that after doing the steps 3 times, it was like I'd never done it. There was so much stuff, you know. You may have heard the people saying it's like peeling the onion. Oh my God, how many fucking layers of the onion are there? I mean, I was out in Poland and I did that third step four over Christmas, and it fucking broke me in half. And I came back and went through the rest of the steps. I've now had this sponsor for 5 years. In 4 weeks, I will be 10 years clean. For 10 years clean. It's been a long process. A process is the operative word. You know, I wanted everything straight away. I wanted it all like yesterday. You know what I mean? That kind of person. But I'm happy with the place that I'm in now. I was saying in a meeting yesterday that every day for me is like a blank sheet of paper now. I turn everything over to my higher power. I've got 100% faith in my higher power. I've seen the work of my higher power in my life. When I believe and when I do the right thing, I've had many, many higher power moments. I've been going to court against the mother of my daughter because I didn't see her for the first 3 years of her life. Then I saw her for 10 minutes, an hour here and an hour there for the next 4 years. Then when she was 7, her mother decided that she wasn't going to let me see her anymore. And I've been going in and out of court in Poland for 11 years. And I finally got rights to see my daughter this year. That was delayed by 18 months because of COVID. And I refuse to give up on that little girl because she's a beautiful little girl. And so I'm happy. And that's taken a long time to resolve. I've had therapy about it. I've had a lot of therapy about that. I've felt suicidal about it at times. And the programs helped me through, you know, since I came out of rehab. I've stayed clean, I've worked the program to the best of my ability. You'll have heard that expression many, many times, and you will understand it eventually if you don't understand it now, because none of us are perfect, and we don't get everything straight away, and there is a lot to get. in the program, but it's all in there if you look. So I've worked the program to the best of my ability. I've tried to do the right thing, and I'm getting it right more often than not nowadays. So it's crazy because when I used to go to early meetings, I used to hear people say, "I love Annie. What the fuck is wrong with you?" And now I sit in meetings and I say, "I love Annie." One of the most attractive things I ever heard was a new way to live, because I knew that I needed a new way to live. And I've had to work harder, reversing. In the early days, I had to reverse the negative thoughts in my head. And I went to college. I did level 2 counselling. Then I did level 3 counselling. And I learned a lot about myself and realised about those negative patterns. And I had massive bouts of depression when I came out of rehab. Because I was suicidal, and I was told that I was in grieving for a lost lifestyle, which made kind of sense to me, but I thought, well, hang on, you know, I need to put that to bed one day. And it's through reversing that negative thought pattern, I've managed to conquer the depression. I came off of antidepressants after 1 year, and I had about depression on that fourth year when the shit hit the fan again. But since then, it's been 6 years now, and I haven't had depression at all. And I know what to do. If I feel it coming on, I'm the only person who knows I can feel it coming on. But it doesn't come on, because for me, depression comes on when loads of things go wrong. And loads of things don't go wrong in my life anymore, because I take right decisions. You know, for years and years, I took the wrong decisions. And if I can't make my mind up about anything, I don't do anything. And that kind of thing, you know, that kind of thinking, I don't make rash judgments and rash decisions all the time. And I'm not aggressive and I'm not violent like I was. And, you know, my mum's 89 now. She's in her twilight years, and I'm thankful that I can spend time with her and spend quality time with her, take her out for lunch every couple of weeks. And one of my sisters died 7 years ago from a brain tumour, and I wouldn't have been anywhere near the hospital if I'd have been using. But this time I was there, I sat with her, I held her hand as she took her last breath, and it was a humbling experience. She was extremely brave, and I hope that I can be that brave on my deathbed. And it was a tragedy, really. My dad died of cancer when I was 35. He never saw me clean. I had a whole load of guilt around that. And it's only through working the steps that I've come to terms with that as well. You know, to write my dad a letter. I had to read it at his grave. I had to read it to my sponsor. And I've made amends to my dad, you know, as in the best way that I can. I've made amends to my other sister. And she is really happy now, because she sees me as I am today, and she tells me that I'm so nice now, I'm not angry anymore. And yeah, it's nice to hear, you know. But I was saying to you at a meeting yesterday that when I look at my life, it's like a scene from one of those war movies where the battle's finished and you're looking across the battlefield and there's fucking potholes and fires and dead bodies and burnt out vehicles everywhere and smoke rising, and it's like that, you know. My past life is like a fucking war zone. I was a whirlwind in people's lives, and I'm not like that anymore, you know, and it's all thanks to this program. And I have to give myself credit. I've stuck with it, and it has been fucking difficult at times. It has been fucking difficult, you know. But you know, in the early days, I used to think, fucking do this for the rest of my life. I've got to do these meetings for the rest of my life. And now, I can't imagine not doing meetings for the rest of my life. I really can't imagine it, and I thank God for NA, and I wish I'd fucking found it when I was 21, you know, in 1981. I wish I'd have had the sense to take it seriously then, because I would have had another probably 20 or 30 good years. But as it is, you know, I'm 61 now. I'm 10 years clean. Hopefully I'll get another 20 or 30 years, and I will progress and I will grow from here. And if you stick around in NA, you'll certainly meet me again. And I'm going to leave it there.